So SYK is a 0+1 dimensional theory of N fermions with four-body, or more generally Q-body interactions, random all-to-all interactions. And it has the property that it flows to a CFT in the infrared, corresponding to strong coupling. So here's the Lagrangian. So here, four-body interaction with a coupling Ji, Jkl. So the indices run from 1 to n, and n is large. And this is just the kinetic term. So the kinetic term and the interaction. In the UV, when this isn't present, the fermions have dimension 0. And in the infrared, at strong coupling, they have dimension 1 over q, which in this case is 4. So the fermions flow from dimension 0 to dimension 1/4. So SYK was introduced by Kitaev a few years ago as a solvable model of holography. So in this talk, we will solve SYK. By this, I mean we will compute all correlation functions at strong coupling to leading non-trivial order in 1 over n. So before doing that, let me explain why we want to solve SYK. So there are two canonical examples of ADS-CFT. So as I said, the main feature of SYK is that it's a CFT in the infrared. And that's really what we mean by solve SYK. We mean solve the infrared of the theory, strong coupling, where it's a CFT. So the two canonical examples of ADS-CFT, the first one is n equals 4, maximally supersymmetric Yang-Mills. So it's a CFT, and for any value of the TUF coupling. And as is well known, n equals 4 is dual to string theory in ADS5 cross S5. And at large TUF coupling, there's a gap. And so there's Einstein gravity, black holes, and then lots of stringy modes. Well, because there's an S5, there's also Kaluza-Klein modes, but never mind. So n equals 4 is an incredibly rich theory. It's also integrable. And over the last decade, major progress has been made in solving n equals 4, thereby enriching our understanding of ADS-CFT. So this was n equals 4, a matrix theory, a gauge theory. So the other canonical example of ADS-CFT is very different. It's the free or the critical vector ON model. This again is a solvable large N CFT. As Klebanov and Polyakov conjectured, it's dual to Vasiliev higher spin theory in ADS. And n equals 4 and the vector ON models are very different theories. And correspondingly, the bulk duals, in one case string theory, in the other case Vasiliev theory, are very different. So SYK is neither n equals 4 nor the ON model. It's a new class of solvable, strongly coupled large N CFTs. And it's harder than the ON model. The ON model is basically trivial to solve. But it's far easier than n equals 4. N equals 4 people have been solving over the past decade, whereas SYK will solve in half an hour. Well, today in the talk in half an hour. And because of this, one might hope that since it's easier to solve than n equals 4, it has the disadvantage that the bulk is more difficult than string theory, yet the bulk is easier than Vasiliev, which is very poorly understood. So it's sort of the easier the CFT, the harder it is to understand the bulk, and vice versa. And so SYK is in the middle. So one might hope it's just right. And it's because it's really neither a vector model nor a matrix model, it's plausible that the bulk dual of SYK is a truly new theory. So one of the goals is to find the theory in ADS that's dual to SYK. So here I have a little chart of what I said. So vector models sum bubble diagrams, Feynman diagrams like the one I drew. So these are very easy to sum. So an example is the vector n model, like phi squared squared. And the bulk dual, so within the vector n model, there are conserved currents, phi, a string of derivatives phi, field is phi. And each of those conserved currents is dual to a higher spin particle in the bulk. The more derivatives, the more the spin of the particle in the bulk, and they're all massless. So in the bulk, one has an infinite tower of massless particles, spin 0, spin 2, spin 4, etc. So that's clearly very different from what we're used to, and this is Vassiliev theory. On the other hand, so then there are matrix models, and matrix models, as was recognized by Tuft, they sum planar Feynman diagrams, so something like the one I drew. And planar diagrams is better than summing all diagrams, but summing planar diagrams is difficult, and there's no general known way to sum planar diagrams. So the solutions of n equals 4 don't rely on directly summing the diagrams, but making use of integrability properties of mapping to spin chains and so on. So the bulk dual of n equals 4 is string theory in ADS. And here there's the property that so n equals 4 is conformal at any Tuft coupling, so one can go to very large Tuft coupling. And then there's a gap in the bulk, so there are a few light fields, and then the stringy modes, which whose mass scales with the Tuft coupling, and so at large Tuft coupling they become heavy of the string scale. And so then one can, at low energies, describe the theory by Einstein gravity, and so it's easy to work with. The opposite of here, where in Vassiliev there's no limit in which there's just a few light fields. One really has to deal with all of them. Vassiliev also has the problem that there's a large symmetry, and so it's not really clear how to talk about just gravity. You sort of have to talk about everything at once. So SYK, as we'll discuss, it sums a new class of diagrams, new from our perspective, Mellon diagrams, so diagrams like I drew here. And as we'll see, the bulk dual contains a tower of massive particles. So SYK, the symmetry after disorder averaging is an ON symmetry. So it's similar to the vector model in that sense. And for this reason, there's a single tower of particles in the bulk. The invariance, the analogs of the phi string of derivatives phi is chi time derivative to some power chi. And those are dual to the massive particles in the bulk. And what the bulk dual is of SYK is something that is still not known, but in the talk we'll solve SYK, which is clearly helpful to trying to find the bulk dual. So initially SYK seemed very special. So as I wrote it down, it's fermions with a random interaction. It doesn't look like something we normally study. Indeed, it was just something that Kitaev made up, inspired by the Shastev-Ye model, which involved spins with random interactions, which in turn, well, yeah. On the other hand, even though it was made up, it had a combination of three properties, which altogether was somewhat remarkable. It was first a CFT in the infrared, which is not so easy to achieve. Second, it's solvable at large n. And third, it's maximally chaotic. So one can define chaos in quantum systems and define a quantum layup and F exponent, and SYK has the same exponent as a black hole. So since SYK was introduced, there have been a number of generalizations and variations. For instance, one could add flavor, or alternatively, one could add supersymmetry, and there are many others. And all of these have the same three properties that SYK has. They continue to be solvable, they're maximally chaotic, and they have a CFT in the infrared. So as I discussed, the two canonical examples of ADS CFT are n equals 4 Yang mils, which is a matrix model, and the ON vector model, which is a vector model. One could ask about tensor models. In field theory, we don't generally discuss tensor models, but phrasing this language, vectors, matrices, the obvious next step is tensors. Perhaps one would have said that the reason we don't generally study tensors, we don't have examples in nature that are described by tensors. But in any case, it would seem that it would be too difficult. Since, as I discussed, vector models are solvable, whereas matrix models are not really solvable. You can't really sum the planar diagram, so one would think that tensor models would be even harder than matrix models. In fact, tensor models were being studied for years here at Perimeter by Rousseau, Gourav, and others. And they were being studied in zero dimensions, like matrix models had initially been. And what was noticed was this feature that only Mellin, for appropriate tensor models, let's call them Mellonic tensor models, the only diagrams being summed are Mellins. So, which is very nice. So it was pointed out by Witten last year that if one takes the tensor chi, now it has three indices. If one takes the same tensor model that had been studied, and instead of zero dimension makes it zero plus one dimension, so the same interaction, quartic interaction with these three index tensors, and the same kind of kinetic term as for free fermions, chi d tau chi, then one has the same Feynman diagrams as SYK, the same propagator, so one, all the correlation functions at leading order in 1 over n are the same as for SYK. Aside from connecting with the tensor literature, this also had the advantage from the high energy point of view that there's no longer disorder. It also has the advantage that SYK no longer seems special, because since we've studied vector models and matrix models, it's only natural to study tensor models. So one can say we're now studying tensor models. So it would be nice if tensor models appeared somewhere. So in fact, there were discussions, though somewhat vague, that appeared in Klebrov and Sitlin in 96, from counting entropy of M5 brains, that the entropy scaled like n cubed as opposed to n squared. And so there are some heuristic arguments that if one has stacks of M5 brains and M2 brains stretching between them, then this should be described by tensors. So if we go back to the slide I had a bit ago, so I had matrix models, vector models, and SYK in the middle, so I was grouping it by level of difficulty. But since SYK is the same as the tensor models, I've exchanged the two columns, and now it's vector, matrix, and tensor. So the only difference between the tensor models and SYK is that SYK had an ON symmetry, whereas the tensor models have a slightly different symmetry. For instance, ON to the sixth for the one I wrote down. For computing correlation functions of the fermions, it doesn't matter. But for constructing the bulk dual, it does matter, because the usual dictionary we use in ADS CFT is that the gauge invariant operators on the CFT are dual to bulk fields. Since we're in zero dimension, gauge invariant is the same as being invariant under the global symmetry. So if the symmetry is different, then the invariant operators are different. So for the tensor model, there are far more invariant operators. And so the correlation functions are the same at large n. But there's now many towers of massive particles in the bulk, really an enormous number. So at this point, it's not clear which theory should have the bulk dual, SYK, the tensor model, both or neither. But the dual of the tensor model seems even harder than the dual of SYK, simply because of this huge number of particles. Yes?
And the mass is not terribly large, is that the idea? Or there's no gap in the mass?
That's right, there's again no gap. So the anomalous dimensions are always of order one. Which is unlike the ON model where the well, if it's the free ON model, then the anomalous dimensions are zero, and if it's the critical ON model, then they're order one over n, so they're again zero. Which is why one has this tower of massless particles, because there are just no anomalous dimensions. So it's again in level of difficulty, it's again in between matrix and vectors. So this is just what I said before, that SYK and the Milonic tensor models have the same large n fermion correlation functions. And for the rest of the talk, I'll focus on SYK when it comes to solving the model and discussing its bulk dual. But the results trivially extend to tensor models and all the variations and generalizations of SYK, flavor, supersymmetry, higher dimensions, et cetera, et cetera. So to recap why we want to solve SYK, the main reason, I guess, for me is to better understand holography and black holes. Even though there are these two examples of ADS-CFT and many variations, there's not really successfully been a way of taking the CFT and seeing that it's a string theory in ADS in any direct way. And so one might hope that since SYK is very simple and solvable and easily solvable, relatively easily solvable, that one could do this. The second reason is, as we discussed, that there's no real candidate for what the ADS dual could be. We knew of string theory, and then we knew of Vasiliev theory, but there's no theory that I'm aware of which is left as a theory in ADS. Of course, one can try to take some limits and manipulations of those two, which might be the dual of SYK, but it's not really known what the dual is, and it's an interesting question to find it. So the third reason that SYK is of interest within condensed matter doesn't really have to do with ADS-CFT. It has to do with the fact that one can use it as a model of a strange metal, a non-Fermi liquid. And it's also maximally chaotic, so it's useful in that sense. So the main use is that it's a strongly coupled system which one can actually solve. And as I said, our solution will apply to all the Milonic tensor models. In fact, the computation of the SYK correlation functions will be direct. We can compute it just by summing all the Feynman diagrams. And the result will be inherently interesting. One might assume that higher point functions just get more and more complicated and you don't learn much. But in fact, essentially, all higher point functions will follow from the six-point function through simple rules in a way which will generalize the other theories, not just SYK or tensor models. Are there any questions? Or I'll start the computation.
So here, just looking ahead, in your solution, will it be that the major contribution come from the low-energy modes, or will the entire tower contribute?
I didn't hear the first part of the question, but the entire tower will be relevant.
Okay.
So let's start with the two-point function. So as I mentioned, there's this property that the only diagrams being summed in computing the two-point function at large n are melons. So melons nested within melons. It's true that this doesn't really look like melons, but I didn't invent the name. Because it's just melons within melons, one can write down a closed set of equations, just an integral equation, really, which determines the two-point function. And so that's, you could say, remarkable property number one, that one can just write down an integral equation for the two-point function, which you can't normally do. And the surprising second property is that the solution of this equation in the infrared at strong coupling is that of a CFT two-point function. So in one dimensions, it's one over time to the two delta, where delta is the dimension. In this case, the dimension is 1/4, which you can see by dimensional analysis. But knowing that there's a CFT in the infrared is very non-trivial. So this was recognized by Sarge de Vigne in the 90s in a slightly different model, the Sarge de Vigne model. But it still had the property that it sums only melons. So that was the two-point function. Let's move on to the four-point function. So we're going to go up to the 10-point function. And then it will be obvious how to continue. So in not even discussing SYK, in a general CFT, one writes the four-point function as a sum of conformal blocks with some OPE coefficients. So I've denoted F delta HN. This is the conformal block. So this is so the notation means that this is a conformal block for operators, external operators, all having dimension delta, and an exchanged operator of dimension H. So to be clear, if we have this four-point function, then so chi, and then we do the OPE, then this gives an O. This gives an O. And then the conformal block, well, it gives, if we do the OPE, we get O and all its descendants, which are just derivatives. Then we sum all of those, and then the answer is in terms of conformal blocks, which I called F delta H of X. X is the cross ratio of the four times, the external times. So this is 1 over tau 1, 2 to the 2 delta, tau 3, 4 to the 2 delta, x to the h, and then a hypergeometric function. So the form won't be important for the talk. I mean, it's important for solving it, but not for following the talk. But these are just SL2R conformal blocks. They're analogous to the conformal blocks, which are maybe more familiar for two-dimensional CFTs, the global blocks, which is just a product of these for the holomorphic and anti-holomorphic Z and C bar. So those are the conformal blocks. So since it's a CFT, we write the four-point function as a sum of conformal blocks with some OP coefficients Cn squared, and we sum over all the operators Hn. So these operators being summed over, these are the primary fermion bilinear On invariant singlets On, and I'm denoting their dimension by Hn. So schematically, they look like chi d tau to the 1 plus 2n chi. It's sort of like one is doing Taylor expansion. So we're doing the OPE. So we bring these two fermions together and write this as a sum of chi d tau 1 plus 2n chi, the same for this one. And that's basically O. Yes?
So usually in high-dimensional CFTs, when people write down the OP,
yes,
they use ideal quantization, state operator correspondence. Do all these things exist in one dimension?
Yeah, but they're sort of trivial. But yeah, you don't need state operators to OP. OP is just OP. Here it's sort of trivial because in two dimensions, you map from the cylinder to the plane. When you do the state operator, here you map from a line to a line. So there's really nothing to do. So So this is the standard form of writing a four-point function as a sum of conformal blocks. There's an alternative way of writing it, which will actually be more useful for us, which again is general. Instead of writing it as a sum of conformal blocks, we're going to write it as a contour integral, dh over 2 pi I, with some density rho of h, which is specific to the theory. And what I put here is psi of h. Psi of h is the sum of the conformal block plus what's called its shadow. So instead of exchanging an operator of dimension h here, one exchanges an operator of dimension 1 minus h. If one closes the, so to get between these two representations, if one closes the contour here, the contour consists of this line and a bunch of circles. So this is dictated by representation theory of SL2. If one closes the contour, then one picks up the poles of rho, and one picks up the poles of rho and essentially the conformal block at the value of h where there's a pole. And there's a bunch of poles, and they occur at the h is equal to these hn's, the physical dimensions. And the cn squared is basically the residue of rho at the pole. So that's how one gets from here to here. Good. So this was just generally true for CFTs. The special property about SYK is that we actually know rho. So we know the four-point function. We know rho because the four-point function at leading order in 1 over n is given, the only Feynman diagrams contributing are these ladder diagrams. As a result that one only has ladder diagrams, finding the four-point function effectively amounts to just summing a geometric series, provided one does it in the correct basis. And so rho is actually fairly simple. Rho of h, it just involves some gamma functions. OK, so that was the two-point function, the four-point function. So the two-point function, we summed Mellin diagrams. But one can forget about that. The conclusion of summing all the Mellons was that we got a CFT in the infrared with fermions having dimension delta. For the four-point function, we summed ladder diagrams. But again, one can forget about that because the end result is that we know rho of h. And so we can proceed. So in fact, in computing the higher point functions, it won't be relevant how we got the two-point and four-point. We just need to know that we know them. OK, that was the two-point and the four-point. Now I'm moving on to the six-point. So the six-point function consists of a sum of two diagrams. So the first are planar. So both diagrams just consist of taking three four-point functions and gluing them together. So the first diagram is planar, and I've drawn it like this. And the second one is not planar. So the three four-point functions meet at a Mellin, which I've drawn as a line. Since it's not planar, it's a little hard to draw, but it's just three four-point functions. Computing this is, so we know the four-point function. I said it's the four-point function is just a sum of conformal blocks. The conformal blocks are these hypergeometric functions. So really, all one has to do is take those four-point functions, stick them into here, and do a few integrals. In principle, straightforward, but in practice, very difficult to do the integrals. So there's a slight simplification, which is that the fermion six-point function, which I showed previously, is because of conformal variance, it has the same information as a three-point function of the bilinears. So the bilinears O were just chi d tau to some derivatives chi. So if one knows all those correlation functions, then one can get the six-point function of the fermions. The advantage of working with this is that this is a CFT three-point function. So its functional form is fixed by conformal invariance. So H1 is the dimension of O1 and so on. So CFT three-point function, its form is fixed to be this. And there's just some coefficients C1, 2, 3. So all one needs to determine is this coefficient. In any case, so we did this computation and found these coefficients. So let me tell you what the answer is. So the contribution from the first diagram is what I'm calling I1. And it consists of a bunch of gamma functions of the dimensions. The second contribution from the planar diagram consists of a sum of generalized hypergeometric functions. These four F3s at argument one with some coefficients, which are a bunch of gamma functions.
Who's rho on the transparency before?
This row is this.
Okay.
So this might look like an enormous mess, but so there are a few properties I want to emphasize. The first is that what I showed is so it's a three-point function of these operators of dimension h1, h2, h3, and the fermions have dimension delta, so it's obvious the answer should be some function of these dimensions because the h's and the deltas because there's nothing else. Normally, one computes, the thing that actually exists in the theory is the three-point function of the physical operators. So the dimensions, these h's, are something physical. So what I called OH, it's roughly chi d tau to the 1 plus 2 n chi. And so hn is 2 delta plus 2 n plus 1 plus some. So this is, if the theory was free, this would be true, 2 delta, 2 n plus 1 from the derivatives, plus some order 1 correction. So the h's are some physical thing, whereas I presented the answer for the three-point function as sort of an analytically extended three-point function where you can take the h's to be anything. This will be necessary later on, but one can notice the following property, that if we just view it as a function of h1, then the three-point function has poles when h1 is h2 plus h3 plus 2n. If you notice, for instance, it occurs here, gamma minus h1 plus h2 plus h3 over 2, that it has poles when h1 is h2 plus h3 plus 2n. This will be very important.
It has nothing to do with the n on the black.
It has nothing to do with?
The n on the black.
No, this is a different subscript. Completely different subscript. Yes, I'm using the subscript to denote multiple things. Good. So this was, so again, to summarize the two-point function, we summed melons. The end result was that in the infrared we have a CFT with the fermions of dimension delta. For the four-point function, we summed ladders. And all of this was encoded in rho of h, which describes the four-point function. For the six-point function, we glued 3 4-point functions, and the result is encoded in these coefficients. So all of this is special to SYK, these coefficients, this fact that we sum ladders. The next step will be general. So let me now draw the 8-point function. So the 8-point function consists of just gluing more ladders. So this will be a property, all the correlation high-point correlation functions, you just glue together 4-point functions. So given how difficult the 6-point function was, one might think that this will be hopeless to compute this, and that the answer will not will be too much of a mess to have any nice interpretation. So again, the computation is, in principle, straightforward. You insert the 4-point function, a sum of hypergeometric functions, and so on. In fact, the answer is simple. And this is the answer. So this is the answer for these diagrams. Let me explain what appears here. So we have this FH 1, 2, 3, 4 is a conformal block with external operators 1, 2, 3, and 4. Well, O1 through O4, the guys appearing here with an exchange operator OH. So it has basically the same form as, it's again a hypergeometric function, but slightly different. It's like this, but there's h minus h1 plus h2, et cetera, et cetera. But that's fixed by conformal invariance, so it's obvious that should be present. Then one has C12H. So these are the bilinear three-point function coefficients. So 1, 2, and H. Then C34H. There's rho of H, which is what appeared in the four-point function, C of H squared, which was the residue of rho of H, the OP coefficients of chi chi going to O. And then we have a contour integral over H, and the contour is the same one I showed in the four-point function. So the answer is as if we have Feynman-like rules, but where one puts a C12H when one has an interaction vertex. So that's like the analog of the coupling. The analog of a propagator that we would put if we had a Feynman diagram is a conformal block. No, I guess that's not really the analog of the propagator. But in any case, it's clear that we have.
I would have the tendency to draw another contribution where the ladder is in the middle, it's collapsed to.
Yes.
That's separate or it's included in this? Or?
It's included in this, yes. this is not. Yes. This is not yet the full 8-point function, but it's one of the contributions to the 8-point function. Once we know how to compute this one, the other ones are just simple. Well, just permutations. So let me convince you, at least, give some. Well, let's look at this expression some more and see why it has the correct form that we would expect. So here we have a contour. So what we would expect is that the four-point function should be a sum of single trace blocks and double trace blocks. To explain this point, when we do the OP 01, 02, so the OP of 01, 02 gives 03 with some. With the coefficients that we computed. And then there are double trace blocks. So double trace blocks is these are O3 e tau to the 2n O4. So this is just what one expects from the OP in a large n theory. Single trace blocks, double trace blocks, and then stuff that's higher order in 1 over n. There's also an order one piece that's just O1, O2. Good? So as a result of this form of the OP, we expect that, so we have O1, O2, O3, O4. So we do the OP in O1, O2. We pick up this guy. Here, I really mean OH, because we sum over all operators. So then we do the OP in O3, O4. We pick up this guy. So we expect, so that gives this what I'm calling a single trace block. And then from these guys, from doing the OP here and here, we get one of these. And from the OP here and here, we get one of these. And so then we get a double trace block. So we expect the four-point function is a sum of single trace blocks and double trace blocks. The coefficient of, good. So we now close this contour. And indeed, we pick up poles from rho of H. The poles of, as you might remember, C of H squared was the residue of rho of H. Those were the OP coefficients of chi chi going to O. So this precisely cancels this stuff. And we get C12H, C34H, FH1234, where we sum over the HNs, the physical dimensions. So this was obvious that this would occur, that these would be the coefficients of the single trace blocks, just because these OP coefficients are the three-point functions. It's the same thing. The coefficients of the double trace blocks, on the other hand, were not obvious. Well, we just didn't know them. But this formula gives them to us when we close this contour. So we picked the poles of rho of H, but these C's, the three-point function coefficients, they also have poles. As I emphasized, there was a pole when when H equals H1 plus H2 plus 2n. So we pick up the poles from these guys, so that's this line. And we pick up the poles from this guy, and that's this line. And so And these are our double trace blocks. So the poles, the analytic structure where the poles are in the, this analytic and continuous three-point function was very important in order to get the correct structure for the four-point function. So it's clear how to generalize to higher point functions. So for instance, the 10-point function corresponding to the 5-point function of bilinears, we have 2 4-point functions. Now we have 2 contour integrals. And then we again have C1 to HA, CHA, H3, HB, HB, H4, H5. And now we have a 5-point conformal block. Yes?
Is this a conjecture or is it a result?
It's a result. Yes. The previous line is also a result. If I have time at the end, I'll say how we got it. It's actually very simple. And these are the 5-point conformal blocks. So any point conformal blocks are fixed by SL2 symmetry. One just needs to compute them. So for instance, the 5-point one we computed, so this is an apple function F2, just a generalization of a hypergeometric function. But yes. So one can now see how to write down any point function. They're just these simple rules. For each internal 4-point function, you write this contour integral with this row of stuff. And then you insert these 3-point function coefficients. So it's Feynman-like rules, but now for at strong coupling. Yes.
Shouldn't also some of the possible tree structures to connect this experiment?
Absolutely, yes, yes, yes. So this is not the full 10-point function, but this diagram corresponds to this.
Some of the trees, trivalent trees which connect.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes?
Sorry, it's a 5-point function related to some sort of convolution of 2 4-point, right? The 5-point conformal block?
Yes.
Can you get it by convoluting 2 4-point conformal blocks, or is something completely new?
It's not complete. So when you do the OPE, you get the operator plus all its descendants. So one can. So this one. So one gets an OP coefficient. And then one, let me write it like this, tau 1 2. So when one does the OP, there's some OP coefficient, and then one gets the operator O3, and then one gets its tower of descendants, which are just derivatives. So this we can call, so the coefficient, so this is tau 1, 2, this I mean tau 1 minus tau 2. So one has this whole tower, which is fixed by conformal invariance, so we can call this function C3 tau 1, 2, D2. And so we know all these coefficients, so if you want the conformal block, 5-point any point, just repeatedly do the OPE so that you get it to a 2-point or 3-point function, and then you have these function C's acting on these 2-point or 3-point functions. And so that, in principle, fully determines it. This is not the most efficient way of computing it, but that fully determines all these things. Yes, it's a. The fact that we're able to write down the answer, well, give rules to write down the answer for all these high-point correlation functions, is of course, it's of course necessary that we have a CFT, because that means we know the functional form of all the correlations. So just to reiterate, we computed the bilinear 3-point function as an analytic function of the operator dimensions. This is not something that's normally done. Normally, you just talk about the 3-point function of the actual operators. The way we were able to do this is that we relied on the fermion 6-point function, so that allowed us to get a 3-point function of bilinears of any dimension. And what was, you could say, remarkable is that the analytically continued 3-point function had singularities in just the right places. this fact that dancing layers, when H1 is H2 plus H3 plus 2n, there's presumably a general reason why this occurred, but I don't know what it is. This formula wasn't special test YK or tensor models or anything. If one is just summing diagrams which consist of four-point functions glued in some way like this, then this formula is just true. So for some theories like vector models, I think this will be true, that these are the only diagrams. For most other theories, there'll be other diagrams, but at least for this class of diagrams, this will be the answer. So one thing I glossed over is that there's actually an additional contribution to the fermion 8-point function, the 4-point function of bilinears, which is not of this form, which consists of four 4-point functions joining at a single melon. So that diagram is not related to these, is not of this form, so that you have to compute separately. So there's some point that I skipped over, but I'm going to skip over that point. Let me now turn to the bulk. So the prime motivation for solving SYK is we first need to figure out what bulk theory is dual to it. And yes, and since there's no candidate, we need to understand how to get to the bulk. So the fact that we solved SYK at large n, that combined with the ADS CFT dictionary means that we have, in principle, determined the full three-level bulk Lagrangian. As I said, the bulk has a tower of fields. We'll call them phi n, which are dual to these ons, the operators for which we were computing the correlation functions, the fermion bilinears. So the bulk should have a Lagrangian with this tower of phis. So on general grounds, we can just write down a Lagrangian. There's a kinetic term, a mass, cubic couplings, quartic couplings, and so on. I didn't write any derivatives for the cubic terms because one can do a field redefinition to get rid of them. This is no longer true for the quartic case. So the procedure is that one takes this general Lagrangian, computes Witten diagrams to compute CFT correlation functions with this Lagrangian, and then matches with the correlation functions in SYK in order to fix the coefficients. And that, in principle, determines the full bulk Lagrangian. So more specifically, the two-point function one computes this Witten diagram, and one gets a CFT two-point function, so that determines the masses of the fields in terms of the dimensions of the operators. The three-point function one computes this diagram. So this is, again, easy to do. So one gets a conformal three-point function, which then relates the cubic coupling lambda nmk to cnmk, the three-point function coefficients of the bilinears, these guys. The four-point function one computes these Witten diagrams, et cetera, and so on. One point was that the even though we solved this by K, the solution wasn't particularly simple. So the cubic couplings were complicated. As I showed, the three-point function was the sum of generalized hypergeometric functions 4 of 3. But one very useful property is that these coefficients are analytic functions of the deltas and the h's. And what this means is that to the extent that two theories have similar deltas and h's, similar dimensions, the three-point functions and by extension, all point functions will be the same. This is very useful because the high dimension operators, they have small anomalous dimensions. So if one takes n to be very large, so the dimension of O n is large, then the dimension is roughly 2 delta plus 2 n plus 1, which is what you would get if the theory was just free. If one just had n free fermions, and one constructed these singlets. So this is useful because then we can rely on free field theory to use saddle point techniques to approximate these high dimension operators. And the result is that one can approximate the three-point function, the cubic couplings in the bulk by something very simple, n factorial. So the cubic couplings, lambda n1, n2, n3. So these are the couplings of the fields phi n1, phi n2, phi n3 in the bulk. The mass of these fields is roughly n. And the cubic couplings are this simple combinatorial thing of n factorial over what is basically n minus 2 and 1 factorial, n minus 2 and 2 factorial, n minus 2 and 3 factorial. So this is vaguely reminiscent of couplings that one has in string theory along the leading Regge trajectory. But that's all I can say about this. I mean, in two dimensions, the string, there are no transverse excitations, so one does not have string theory. But the next step would be to find some theory of extended octopus which naturally gives these couplings. So one can again simplify the four-point function in this limit and obtain something simple, which I've shown here. And so again, one wants a theory of extended objects which naturally gives us in the bulk. One thing I can say is that this four-point function is not consistent with the bulk. So if the bulk Lagrangian just had a single quartic term, just lambda phi to the fourth, or maybe a few terms with some derivatives, then the four-point function would take a different form. It would not be of this form. So the fact that it's of this particular form, as one can see by taking the Mellon transform, indicates that in the bulk, there's really an infinite number of terms with more and more derivatives at the quartic level. So the bulk is non-local, which is not surprising. It was expected. It's non-local in this language because we expect the bulk to be a theory, a string theory, and not a local field theory. Yeah, so this I'll skip over as well. Okay, let me get to the conclusions. So the point was that the SYK fermion 2-point, 4-point, and 6-point functions were coded in these delta rho of H and C123. These were specific to SYK, but then all higher point functions, all higher point correlation functions, were expressed in terms of these through simple Feynman-like rules. And so one can imagine a much broader class of theories where the 2-point function sums not Mellons, but something else. The 4-point function sums ladders, not ladders, but something else. But then the higher point functions is just consists of gluing 4-point functions. Then this formula would apply. So here it was again. This I already said. The fact that this formula worked required these seemingly remarkable analytic properties of the 3-point function having poles in just the right places. There was also the property of universality. Neglecting this additional diagram, the fact that the correlation functions only depend on the dimensions of the operators. And so one thing that we learned from this is that so one can wonder how important it is that SYK is strongly coupled. So of course, the fact that it's maximally chaotic relies on it being very strongly coupled and so on. In terms of the correlation functions, what we find is that the correlation functions if one has a correlation function of exclusively high dimension operators, then it's basically the same as a correlation function in free field theory. So it's really the correlation functions involving low dimension operators which are encoding the strong coupling aspects of SYK. So in terms of in terms of the bulk, we simplified in the limit in which one has very high dimension operators, then one can simplify the 3-point and 4-point functions. And the next step is to find some string theory which can naturally give these. All right, thank you. Yes?
So when people computed the 4-point function,
yes?
There was this whole continuous spectrum of imaginary dimensions, right?
Yes.
Did you keep that around or not?
So what you're referring to is, so there's not a continuous, so this was an intermediate step. Sorry. So you're referring to the 4-point function in this form. So indeed, here in this contour, there's this line, which is the continuous thing, and these circles. If one closes the contour, then one gets to this representation, which is a sum of conformal blocks. And here one has the physical dimension.
What happened to the imaginary dimensions?
There are no, we closed this contour. So we this line, we closed it over, and we picked up the poles.
Which are not in 2, 4, 6, 8.
Yes.
There are some poles which are a bit away.
That's right.
And then you go on the other poles.
Yes. So this was the contour. So the contour is this and then this. So that's the contour. We close the contour. And then we pick up poles. And there are poles sitting here, 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 here. So the end result is we close the contour, we pick up just the poles. So we have a sum of the residues at the poles. And that's the previous line, this one. Yes?
Can you say maybe something about the part you skipped over, like the near conformality?
I skipped over like half the talk.
Yeah.
Yes. So the part I skipped over is, well, I was only going to mention if someone complained. The 4-point function, so SYK isn't truly a CFT in the infrared. There's one of the conformal blocks coming from the lowest dimension operator. Turns out to not be a conformal block. So it breaks conformal invariance. The stuff I was computing is just for the conformal sector. One can add the other stuff if one wants.
To be exactly your CSYK model.
Yes, to be exact, what I'm computing is really in CSYK, which is a variant of SYK, which is truly conformal. But it also applies to SYK, but there are just some additional additional terms one should compute to get the non-conformal piece, which can clearly be separated. In the bulk, this is related to the fact that the bulk dual of SYK contains dilaton gravity. So in two dimensions, there's no analog of Einstein gravity. So the bulk contains dilaton gravity. And because it's dilaton gravity, it's not ADS, it's nearly ADS, which corresponds to the fact that SYK is only nearly a CFT. So the bulk really contains dilaton gravity, which I didn't mention, plus this infinite tower of fields. And I was discussing the infinite tower of fields and not the dilaton piece. Yes?
Can you